Are supported by the Brooklyn Park Economic Development Authority, celebrating the Highway 610 opening, providing commercial and industrial opportunities as big as your imagination. Online at www.brooklynpark.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. The battle continues over the education budget proposed by Governor Jesse Ventura, a pared-down proposal that cut $300 million out of the combined requests of both the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. It also held K-12 funding down to a 4.4% increase. University of Minnesota President Mark Udoff and other education officials have expressed shock at the numbers and warned the consequences could be dire for a state that needs highly trained workers and educated students more than ever before. In response, Governor Ventura has said that he's come to the conclusion that, quote, no amount of money will satisfy the education system, end quote. He's called education funding a dark hole and an endless pit. We'll talk to Governor Ventura today about his proposed budget and how he sees the role of the state in education. He joins us in the studio. Thanks for coming by today.
Hi, Catherine. And here I thought you were going to, you've lost weight, I've lost weight. I thought we'd both come in here and talk about our diets and tell everyone how they could lose weight during the winter time so they can look good in their swimsuit.
Well, if
this
you
summer.
Want to stick around for the second hour, you know. We can do that.
And I do want to remark, you're looking good.
Well, thank
you can
you
see
very
that
much.
you're working at it. You told me you had to quit drinking Coca-Cola. That had to be tough.
You know, you're such a wily debater. If you think we're going to get away with this conversation, forget about it.
Well, I just want to get us off on the right foot.
I see.
There
All
we
right.
go.
Flatter the host. Okay, we can count that as done.
You, after all, I worked in your business. I know how that goes.
Well, Governor. Well, you know, how does go the battle here? This has been a pretty controversial fight.
Sure it is, but I have to set the bar somewhere. And you know, the point being is that my main objective, Catherine, was that I looked at the first 2 years that I was in office and saw that permanent government growth of Minnesota had gone up 13%. Permanent government growth. This is new growth. This is beyond what government was, a growth of 13%. And I looked and thought, you mean on my four-year watch, I'm going to be here and watch government grow over 25% permanent growth in my 4 years? That is unacceptable to me. There were two promises I made, and I didn't make many when I ran for governor. The first promise I made was to give back all budget surpluses, which we've done. And the second promise I made was to limit the growth of government. Well, if I allowed the government to grow 25% or better during my 4 years, that's breaking my promise that I ran on, and it was one of two major promises, the only two really major promises that I make. And so I looked to my departments. We looked internally. We did what was called a challenge pool for if they wanted new spending, we'd give them $2 of new spending for every $1 they would cut. We also made the university and MinSCU aware of this months ago. In fact, three quarters of a year ago, and we told them to do the same thing. They didn't. They did nothing like that. They didn't look internally. They didn't try to look at a better way to spend their money if there was one. They didn't even seem to make an effort to do it. It was simply big requests, $221 million for one and 200 and some million for the other. And that was unacceptable to me because, again, I'm looking at the whole picture of what my budget is and what I want to, in my 4 years, look like when I'm done in my leadership.
And you you talk about government growth, but when we're talking about investment in education, how does that lead to bigger government?
Because they ask for more and more and more, and it leads to a bigger. When's the last time you heard of a cut at the U? I mean, you're out there here. Wait, you're out there hearing about time about all these GEs cutting jobs. They in the private sector business out there, you have to live within a budget. Well, to me, education is not living within a budget. They're simply, they go to the trough and they ask for more and more and more. Last budget, I gave K-12 $1.3 billion of permanent increase. And then I get a little perturbed when the media reports that somehow I've cut them. We have not cut K through 12, neither have we cut higher ed. We simply did not give them their full wish list. Let me put it this way. Christmas time. If your kids ask for 10 presents and your budget only allows you to give them 4, does that make it a bad Christmas? Does that mean it was a terrible Christmas because you had to live within a budget and you could only buy your kids 4 presents rather than the 10 that they requested? And when you know, to me, you have to put it in practical terms that the average family out there lives within a budget. They can't spend beyond their means and then go to some unlimited trough out there and collect from them by just simply saying, well, this is what we need and this is what we demand to have, without any internal looking at what programs work, what don't, and compare it to the University of Wisconsin, if you want an apples-to-apples comparison with the U. They're both research universities. Wisconsin is ranked 12th in the nation. The U is ranked 20th. Yet Wisconsin does their job. Their average professors are only paid $73,000 a year over there. Ours are paid $81,000 a year. You know, almost $8,000 higher, and I just think Wisconsin's doing a better job.
Now, Governor, you
and
said,
I don't like losing to cheeseheads, no matter what it is.
You said, you know, have you ever heard of any cuts at the U? And you talked about whether they can make do with less. There is a story in the Pioneer Press today where they talk about how the university share of state money has actually gone down. How, in fact, you have seen cuts at the U. When President Udoff took over, he was able to flatten the administration. There are departments who are making do with less. There are departments who are losing professors.
Then why are they demanding more money to such an extent?
I suspect because during the 90s, when the budgets were lean, they didn't get the increases that some other states did.
They were lean? Really? So now it's on my watch that we're going to fatten that budget. They were lean before, so we're going to fatten it now. Well, then how come there wasn't this outcry during the 90s then? If they were faced with a lean budget, where was the outcry then? Because they weren't.
Well, actually, I do believe there was a former governor. I believe it was, I have to make sure I have it right. I think it was Al Cui who, because of...
And what year was that?
Well, that was back in the 80s.
Or late 70s, early 80s. Quite, you know, you're talking 20 years ago.
But I guess my point is there have been cuts. There are those who will point to history.
Well, and again, it's a case of we haven't cut them anything. We just didn't give them everything that they asked for, and they're upset over that. And certainly now it goes to the legislature. You know, if the legislature wants to deem that they want to spend more money, that's fine. That's their prerogative to do so. But on the flip side, if they do that, there'll be less in tax cuts. So it's a question of priorities of what the legislature wants to do. Do they want to cut taxes to the average person out there, or do they want to give money to special interest?
Some observers have said that you've done a turnaround when it comes to education, that you were this pro-education governor, picked a teacher for lieutenant governor, and now with this budget.
Really? Well, then combine both budgets and see whether I've been fair or not. Take my first budget, the $1.3 billion, add what we're adding to this budget, and see how fair I've been. You can't judge me on one budget. But the point is, okay, let's take K through 12 education. In the last 10 years, it's doubled, the expense. Have we gotten double? Are our kids twice as smart now? Are they 10% smarter? Are we getting the results for doubling the budget in the last decade to education? Are the results there? I'm asking for accountability. I'm asking for results. I want to see tangible results. And I don't think that's unfair to ask, and I think it's me doing my job. Remember this, Catherine. There's an old saying that I've learned. If you spend money, they build you statues for you. If you're tight and are fiscally tough with the checkbook and watch over the people's money, you don't get anything built for you. You won't get a big statue erected somewhere if you don't spend money.
You've written, in fact, that the university isn't a business, but it's about time to have the courage to run it more like one. But don't you have to make a lot of investments in a business?
Sure you do, but you also have to live within a budget that is not a bottomless pit. You have to make hard decisions. I have to make hard decisions. Why is there this controversy? Let me put it to you this way, Catherine. We had $8 billion of new spending requests $8 billion. If I had granted all them, and I'm sure a great deal of those are worthwhile requests. If I grant all those requests, I would be on your show today telling you there will be no rebate check this summer. The budget, projected budget surplus is gone. And ladies and gentlemen, we have to raise your taxes. That's what I would be here telling you today, that if we honored every budget request, $8 billion in new spending, I would be raising your taxes today. Imagine the outcry that would come from that if I was standing here saying, well, we don't have enough in government, so we're going to spend the surplus, spend the rebate, and raise your taxes.
I want to go back again to this question that if you take money and put it in education, that somehow is bigger government. It's a bigger budget, but is it necessarily bigger government? Is it more bureaucracy?
Well, where do you take it from then? Give me an example, and I'm open to it. If legislators want to take it from somewhere else, now let's put it this way. We can eliminate my double-digit property tax reduction, and we can watch seniors who are on fixed income move out of their homes, because they're being driven off their homes because of these unbelievable property taxes that we pay in Minnesota. Well, you know, if it's more important to send that money to the university, then those are hard choices that we're elected to make. And I think my budget is very balanced. It's very fair. You're right, it's very lean, although my first budget was not lean. Well, you're not going to, you know, you can't get without raising taxes. You can't cut taxes without cutting spending.
Are you saying that we can't do your tax reform and fund the university and Minsky at the same rate that they've asked for at the same time?
Be very difficult, not without taking the money from other, you know, maybe we could take it, okay, public safety. We've got to fund the new computer system throughout the state so that we can make sure that, you know, that police departments can communicate with each other, and so that when a person who's broken the law in one county, when he goes to court in another county, that prosecutor will know everything that person's done, and a judge can make a fair assessment of what to sentence that person. That's public safety. I think that's a role government has to play also. Well, should we not do that? And that comes from what? Katie's law. So what's the repercussion here? Ignore Katie's law to fund the U? Or do we just fund everything and raise taxes? Those are the decisions you have to make.
Well, couldn't we perhaps take a look at that huge surplus that's going to be there and use that for the U?
I think that's a great idea. I think that's tremendous. And you know how I'm going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to send everybody their rebate check this summer. And if they want to send it to the U, they are free to do so. I think that's America, democracy at its finest, where the people decide what they want to do with their money. So I will go on the air right now and tell all your listeners, you will get a rebate check this summer, as you've gotten the last two in the row. If you desire to fund the U or any other government program, transportation, whatever it might be, cash that check. Don't send that one back to us. Cash that one, take a personal check of your own, and in the little memo spot, you can write where you would like that money to go, and you can send it back. Or send it directly to the U. You can donate it to the University of Minnesota. You can donate it to the Minsky campus of your choice. There will be all that money sent back in rebate, but the choice will be up to you as an individual what you want to do, because it's your money. It's your money. It's not my money.
We're going to go to Sharon in Duluth, but before we do that, I should give out the numbers. If you'd like to join our conversation with Governor Jesse Ventura, it's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Sharon, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you. I guess my comment real quick is just that I only get a few hundred dollars back on the rebate, and my health taxes are reasonable. I really don't have a big problem with it, maybe because my house is in a real expensive house. And my income, my gross income, is right at $20,000 a year. But I would prefer to see my tax money pooled with other taxpayers' money to make the state itself better. When you talk about this big surplus we got, some of it, if we get a surplus, everyone says we want our money back. But when we're short, they don't, you know, keep raising the taxes. And I think that we are behind on a lot of the things that we need in the state. I know the infrastructure is, in my opinion, is really in poor shape. So I feel better about having my money pooled with other taxpayers' money and doing stuff for the state instead of just getting a little bit back.
And that's certainly your prerogative to feel and do so, and you're certainly entitled to take that check and send it back to us. You know, that you're certainly entitled to do so. If you feel this, you know, that the state spends your money good and you're happy with your tax system, that's fine. But a lot of people are not. A lot of people feel that we are overtaxed. For many, many years, Minnesota's been in the top 10, well into the top 10, leading the nation in taxes. And the two most taxes that are complained about, especially for economic future in this state, are income taxes and property taxes. Like up in Grand Forks, people will drive into South Dakota and pay a sales tax on clothing rather than buy in Minnesota because they get much better selection over there because of the businesses located there. We did a study of it. And the businesses are located in Dakota because of income and property taxes. They'd rather face a sales tax. And Minnesotans, the mayor of East Grand Forks, Mayor Staus, made that very clear to me. He said, we've got to do something. We are losing our economy to the Dakotas because of our property and income taxes here.
Now, President Mark Udoff at the U has said that the budget that you have given him pretty much just allows him to pay for health care premiums. And he's worried, for instance, about the medical school. There's deficits that he needs to make.
I fully funded it. They don't talk about that. $16 million we've got dedicated to their medical school. They don't seem to mention that, though. Much easier to leave it out. You know what else they don't mention? The fact that I've allocated $30 million to go directly to students for student aid because I traveled throughout the state of Minnesota and the students kept telling me over and over again, Governor, why is aid sent to the institution and not to us? Why do we have to fight the institution to get student aid? They said, wouldn't it be better to give the student aid directly to the student and let the institution compete for that student? I said, absolutely, you're correct. Let's make these institutions compete for a change. So I've allocated, they don't tell you that either, do they? That I allocated $30 million directly to student aid to students, then they can choose the education they want, be it a two-year school, be it a technical school, Brown Institute, the university, wherever they desire to go. We'll make these institutions compete for their business as being students. And I also allocated over $4 million for anybody that wants student aid by joining the National Guard and serving their state. They can qualify to go to college that way. So we feel that we have a solid plan here. It's just different than what the status quo has been.
We're going to go to John in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thanks. I wanted to make an observation about a comment that Governor Ventura has been making a lot in the press since the whole budget debacle has come out, and that is that he didn't decrease the budget of the university. He just didn't increase it, or maybe he did increase it slightly. But I guess the comment I want to make overall is that we live in a moving economic stream where through inflation and other pressures, prices are always going up constantly. And if you aren't increasing budgets on a regular basis of institutions like the university, they are going to fall behind. And I think that the comments that he makes to the contrary are rather disingenuous or maybe demonstrate a fundamental misunderstanding of how this works.
Really? Well, you can run for governor and then you can get the job.
Well, I don't think that's a very satisfactory answer to the
issue. Well, let me tell you that I have professionals that put my budget together, so I guess all of them are in error also.
Well, you know
I have an entire staff. I have an entire staff of professionals. You know, for people to think for a minute that I put this budget together on my own time and that I do it alone. I have a full, Pam Wheelock is my Commissioner of Finance, and she is exceptional. She worked for the City of St. Paul and Mayor Coleman for a number of years, and, you know, we put this budget together, and we believe that it's a budget that everyone can live within, and if they disagree, they're certainly entitled to do so. And imagine if I'd have set the bar high, then where would the spending go with the legislature? You know, the ball's in the legislature's court now. They can name their priorities, they can shift it around, and eventually they send it back to me. That's how the process works, sir, and I know how to work within the process.
So does that mean that you certainly expect the budget for education to end up higher than what you've proposed?
Yeah, because career politicians have to satisfy education or they won't get elected. So I fully expect them having to face re-election, which is what most of their goals are. See, the great thing about me is, Catherine, I don't do my job thinking, what do I have to do to get reelected? I do my job and base it upon maybe my decisions are flawed, maybe you'll disagree with them, but you'll at least respect the fact that I make the decision based upon what I deem as being best, and I don't make the decision based upon what do I need to do to get reelected again. And, you know, education is something that is dangerous to take on. You know, it's dangerous. It's far easier to give them what they want completely, and that way you'll probably insure yourself to get reelected.
Now, my understanding is that last night on Twin Cities Public Television, you offered a deal to lawmakers?
Oh, I offered that 2 years ago.
Well, let's explain what that deal
is. I just said if they give me the majority of my initiatives, I won't seek reelection. Because I'll feel that I've accomplished what I came here to do. And I won't seek a re-election just for the sake of holding the job. I'm not going to do that. If I feel there's something more I want to accomplish, there's more challenges to be met, if I feel that I haven't reached the goals that I set out for myself, then I will seek re-election. But I offered them a year ago, I said, you put unicameral on the ballot and I won't seek re-election. If you'll just put it on the ballot. And they wouldn't do it. They were scared to do it, apparently, to put it on the ballot to allow the people to choose whether they wanted the bicameral or unicameral system.
You said if the...
And it was that important to me, that if they'd have just put it on the ballot, I would have said, hey, I accomplished it. I gave the people the right to choose what their government would be. That could very well be good enough for me to accomplish that alone.
All right. And would this... In this current session, what would have to happen for you to say, okay, I've done what I should do?
Meaningful tax reform, which we have the opportunity of doing right now, and the only time you can do reform. Now, there's a difference between tax relief and tax reform. Meaningful tax reform, if that's implemented to a large extent, that could carry a lot of weight, because I believe we need to reform our tax system, and the time to do it is when you are in good times. You will never get tax reform if you're in bad economic times. So this is an opportunity that we have right now. If we don't take advantage of this opportunity, it may not rear its head again for, you know, decades to come.
And an advocate for education would say to you, look, overall, state spending has state spending has increased in the past decade. The university, to take an example, its portion has decreased. This is the surplus.
Its portion has decreased, but they're getting more money. They're not getting less money. They're always getting more money. They get more money every budget. Name me a year they didn't get more money than the year before.
They get more money, but the overall percentage. I mean, there are lots of people who make a direct correlation between state investment and how well a university does.
You know what? I've gotten calls and letters from many people that work at the U. Mm-hmm. They say, Governor, you're right on. You're hitting the nail on the head. You tell me, you're going to sit here and look me in the eye and say institutions of higher education don't have a lot of fat? You're going to tell me they're running on bare bones in these institutions, that they're not money available, a lot of it? How'd they pay off a coach $1.5 million and not even blink an eye?
I think there were some blinks, Governor.
Really? I don't think so. I don't think there was. Only over the philosophy end of whether to pay him off or not. There wasn't any blinks on signing the check.
We're talking to Governor.
Give you another example,
yes,
of how it works. When I was mayor of Brooklyn Park, at one time they told us we were going to be $300,000 short on next year's budget, that we were in a tough, and they wanted to implement a stormwater utility tax to cover this, because of course at state and local government you can't run deficits, you have to have a balanced budget. Well, after we named a task force, the head of the task force was my campaign chairman, Floyd Anderson, calls me 2 weeks later and says, you know how much money the city's got in liquidable cash right now? I said, how much? He said, $71 million. And they were going to raise taxes on $300,000. And I can happily tell you that tax, to my knowledge, has never been implemented in the city of Brooklyn Park. You're talking a city with a $13 million yearly budget that was sitting on $71 million of clean cash money. And they were going to be $300,000 short, and so they're going to implement a new tax, what, to grow the pot bigger? See, you've got a mindset out there of many people, and even in the local level, that come in, and their belief is, well, here's our pot right now. When I leave, I want to ensure it's bigger than when I came in. And I don't believe that's what we should be doing. Government should not have big savings accounts and investment accounts. People should.
We're talking to Governor Jesse Ventura about his proposed budgets for education. We'd like to know what you think. It's 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. I'm Catherine Lanford. You're listening to Mid-Morning. We're going to turn now to Carrie Dwyer. She's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.
Thanks, Catherine, and good morning. President Bush has officially sent his $1.6 trillion tax cut plan to Capitol Hill today. Bush argues surplus estimates make it possible to cut taxes and still save Social Security and pay down the debt. But Democrats say the plan's too expensive and too generous to the wealthy. Prime Minister-elect Ariel Sharon has rejected Palestinians' demand to pick up peace talks where they left off under defeated Prime Minister Ehud Barak. The newly elected prime minister says he's not bound by Barak's concessions. In the final days of his government, Barak offered the Palestinians a state in about 95% of the West Bank and control over parts of Jerusalem sacred to both Muslims and Jews. Sharon says those offers are no longer on the table. He's ruling out more land concessions and says he's interested in reaching an interim agreement. Secretary of State Mary Kiffmeyer is proposing a crackdown on voter fraud. Under her anti-fraud bill, all voters would need to show photo identification and the last four digits of their Social Security number to register to vote. Democrats say there's no evidence of widespread voter fraud, and they argue Kiffmeyer's plan would make it more difficult to vote. Northwest Airlines and its mechanics union are still talking. The National Mediation Board will continue contract negotiations between the two sides through today. Union officials say the two sides have covered a lot of ground on some of the major issues, but there's still a lot more to discuss. The new round of talks began Monday. If the talks are not productive, the board could declare an impasse, triggering a 30-day cooling-off period before the union could strike. Today, light snow, but in the far south, we could see freezing rain or drizzle, highs from 5 above in the northwest to near 30 in the south. Tonight, snow heavier in southern and east-central Minnesota, where there's a winter storm watch tonight into tomorrow. Winds will pick up and it will turn colder. The area could see another 3 to 6 inches of new snow. We'll have lows tonight from 10 below in the northwest to the mid-20s in the southeast. That's a look at the latest news. I'm Carrie Dwyer.
Just remember, Minnesota Public Radio is listener-supported. Because you listen, become a member at minnesotapublicradio.org.
During World War II, African Americans fought two enemies, fascism abroad and racism at home. One of the weapons they used was a hot new medium called radio. Hi, this is Stephen Smith. Please join me for a multimedia presentation called Radio Fights Jim Crow on Tuesday the 13th at 7 p.m. It's at the John B. Davis Auditorium on the campus of McAllister College in St. Paul. This free presentation is co-sponsored by NPR and the Council of Multicultural Affairs at McAllister.
I'm Catherine Land for your listening to Mid-Morning. A reminder, a few minutes after 10 o'clock, we're going to be talking about how well you slept last night. An estimated 40 million Americans have a sleep disorder, and most of us are not getting the sleep we need. Why is that? We'll explore that a few minutes after 10. Meanwhile, we are continuing our conversation with Governor Jesse Ventura, talking to him about his proposed education budget. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. You know, earlier in this hour, Governor, you were talking about how you only made two promises and, you know, you wanted to be able to keep those promises, you know, giving back surplus and limiting the growth of government. You had an encounter with some citizens from Duluth earlier this week.
Well, you know what? That first is kind of a wrong. Those were lobbyists.
Ah.
They were reported as citizens. It was a huge group of lobbyists, and lobbyists are there to spend your money. So it wasn't exactly, you know, what was reported by the media, like these concerned Duluth citizens happened. It happened to all just come down together on a bus. It was a huge lobbying effort from the city of Duluth to lobby the legislature for money directed towards their city and whatever special interests they were. So let's put it into the right connotation. It was a huge group of lobbyists for the most part. There could have been a few citizens tossed into the mix, but for the most part, it was a large group of lobbyists.
Well, one of them made the point that, you actually, that in running, you know, you had very high goals. You wanted a lot of things, including, for instance, health care for every child in Minnesota. That's a goal you haven't been able to attain. Isn't it possible that there are, instead of limiting to yourself and saying, I made these two promises, I have to keep them. Well, reality is you can't keep every promise. And if you're looking at the future of the state, investment in education versus everyone getting a certain size check for a rebate.
Well, those are decisions you make. And as far as insuring kids, we're still working on it. The reason we can't is because of the federal government. The federal government has this particular program that we in Minnesota have been ahead of the ball on. So in turn, because we've already accomplished a great deal of it, they don't give us money that they give other states. So it's a typical government idea. Penalize those that do it right and reward those that do it wrong. And that's what they do with this particular CHIPS program. That's what it's about. It's called the CHIPS program. Well, we're ahead of the ball. If they would give us our fair cut of the money that we deserve from the federal government, we could have all our kids insured because we've done a great job getting the most of them done. If the feds, and we're still pounding away at that. I met with Donna Shalala. She promised we'd get it. She never came through. You know, and so now I'll meet with the Bush administration and we'll keep hammering them. But we're being penalized because we do a better job than the other states around the country. So the other states then get subsidized by the federal government and we in Minnesota do not get that subsidy. We would like that same equal subsidy so that we can continue not only the good job we've done, but we would then have the ability to get all the rest of our kids because some of them are missing the boat because of it. But see how government operates? They reward those that don't do well and penalize those that do. And they do it to states when it's the federal government. If your state is doing a good job, you won't get federal aid, where states that do a poor job will get it.
We're going to go to Phil in Virginia. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning, Catherine, and thank you for taking my call. Good morning, Governor Ventura.
Good morning, Phil.
I work as an educator on the Iron Range, and although I was not born on the Iron Range, I think I have a fair feeling now, having been up there for a few years, of how there's a collision going on between this crisis with the mines closing down, and then on top of that the budget projection. And I just wanted to indicate to you that I think there's probably not a lot of fat up there or up here in the educational system. And in fact, given the fact that we as educators are faced with the prodigious task of retraining hundreds and hundreds of workers so that they can feel as though their work careers and their families are safe, it presents a real severe problem. And I think that given the way in which this budget has been articulated to us, it sounds to many educators as though we're basically a forgotten country up there, and that an area that was has been responsible for much of Minnesota's identity is now being left hung out to dry. And I just wanted to basically say that we're not dealing with a lot of fat, and if cuts are made, we're not going to be able to make the technological advances that we need to make within our facilities and among our and in our professional development to handle this crisis.
Let me ask you this question. Do we need all these minuscule campuses we have? I mean, we have one every 35 miles in this state. Are all these campuses needed, every single one of them?
Well, I work at both Virginia and Evolus together, and I would say that those campuses, although they are considered Mesabi Range Community and Technical College, their identities are very unique. And
what about the rest of the state? Do we need all the campuses we have? Is it, because they've never cut one. I mean, there was a talk that they were going to eliminate Anoka Hennepin, and then there was big outrage up there, so they funded it. Do we need all of these? Is there duplication of work going on?
I don't pretend to be an expert on that particular question. I do know that we feel on the Iron Range as though we are serving a very, very important need. And a cut or closing of a facility at this particular time would be basically a double slap in the face.
All right, let me finish with another question. Take the rebate money and give it to the education. How do I look those miners that just lost their jobs up at the LVT mine up in Hoyt Lakes? I bet you they've worked a full year last year. I bet you they're looking forward to a rebate check. I bet you they're going to need one up there. So, you know, they've lost their jobs.
Right. That's actually what's prompted my call.
Right. And now I'm being told to take the surplus and spend it on the school systems and deny these people the right to get a rebate check this summer when I bet you it's going to be drastically needed by them, check in the mail for $500, $600, $700 tax free.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to cut that. I think that is apples and oranges, education and the future of a viable economy versus a rebate check. I think is maybe not exactly the comparison I'm interested in making, but I see your point, and I certainly I commend you for, you know, looking these problems square in the face and not being afraid to stick to your guns. But I do want to say that I think there are plenty of people who would like to say the same thing, and maybe not quite such a sanguine manner as I'm trying to say it, that we have a problem up on the range, and many people, especially those people whose descendants, are from there, feel as though they're being hung out to dry. And I'll just hang up and let you finish what you need to say.
All right, thank you.
Nothing more to say. He's right. You know, the range is something we need to pay attention to, and we are. That's why they have the IRRB. A lot of people don't realize that the range has its own set of government up there called the IRRB. That's a separate set of government away from our regular government. I always tease my Commissioner John Swift. I go, how's the other governor of Minnesota today? So, you know, the range has always been treated differently than the rest of the state of Minnesota. That's a fact.
Let's go to Barbara in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first is, Governor, you mentioned that employees at the University of Minnesota wrote to you supporting what you have. Have you also heard from people who disagree with you?
Sure.
Has it been an equal amount?
Well, usually the disagreement are in the papers. So they haven't really, and then, of course, you get banks of callers, of course, that are motivated that will call the office, and I get numbers on that. But then you don't know really how to judge that, because generally the callers come when they come in huge amounts where you know that it's special interest and it's people with a particular agenda, because you get it on all topics that way.
But I think it would be safe to say then that there are many people who don't support your views.
Sure, certainly. And that's what the legislature will come to terms with. My job is to submit them a budget, a big picture. Then it's their job really to do the fine tuning and the filling in of the blanks. And they have the right, if they want to allocate more money to higher ed, more money to K-12, even though, you know, $1.3 billion went out last budget, if they want to do more, that's fine. I just question where they're going to take it from. Are they going to, you know, the legislature will have to decide, do we want to give property tax relief to farmers, homeowners, businesses, seniors, or do we want to give it to the U of M, Minsku, and K-12, everything that they want? So those are the judgments and the calls you're elected to make, and you make them. And now the ball is in the legislature's hand, and we'll see how they respond to it, and then ultimately it comes back to me.
We're going to go to Ann calling us from Edina. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Welcome. Thank you. Well, first, Governor Ventura, I just wanted to say how difficult these decisions must have been and how I've always appreciated the integrity from which you seem to make your decisions. I've always got the feeling that you're coming from your heart and soul, and that you really give a lot of thought to any scenario that you find yourself in as governor.
And can I add something to that?
Yes.
What you learn at this job in 2 years, you learn that no matter what decision you make, someone won't like it.
I'm sure.
You know, and so you really have to learn to deal with that, that you know no matter what you do, there'll be someone who will be unhappy with what you do.
Yes. What I also wanted to add was I have the sense from what I've been hearing you say about this particular decision is that, and I'm sure it's very difficult to be in touch face-to-face with every group that your decisions affect, but I think that it would really assist you to go to community colleges around the Twin Cities area and talk to faculty members there, talk to administrators there, and experience for yourself how much time and how hard everybody there is working. They do the jobs of about 2 to 3 people, often working 14 to 15 hour days, and they perform such a unique function for the economy
here.
Okay.
Can I offer something back to you then, what I've been told too? Well, I never went to the U or big. I went to community college also, but I've been told that professors, that usually it's graduate students that teach the classes.
No, that's not at all.
That's not true. So at the U, it's all professors. If I were to go over there and attend classes and walk in there, I would see professors teaching and not graduate students.
I think Ann was making a point about community colleges.
All right.
I'm specifically talking about community colleges, not the university system, because I don't know that locally.
All right, okay.
But the community college instructors are doing higher education that's on the level of university instruction. They're also doing developmental education, and they're so committed to both of these categories, which really
I'm not questioning that.
And it becomes, because we have the population is ever increasing, which is wonderful in the Twin Cities, I think that the requests that they've made are very, very modest. And if you were to understand the culture on the community campuses, because I believe you're a man who does come from his heart, you would probably see that their requests are really very modest and not at all unreasonable. And I just wanted to invite you to talk to some folks who work at community colleges locally.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
We are talking to Governor Jesse Ventura about his proposed education budget. We also see some other budget questions creeping in here. That's okay. 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. This is your opportunity to bring your concerns to the governor. 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. We're going to go to Richard in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
Hello.
And Governor.
Hi, Richard. How are you?
I've been listening to this conversation, also listened to a lot of your things that we hear on television and in the paper. I know what you mean by budgets and how people always add more than they need. However, I'm curious about a couple of things. One of them is that you complained that the university professors were making more than you. And they shouldn't. That was one of the reasons I think you give for not increasing the budget. Whether they need it or not, I do not know. But when I listen to a person who's complaining about trying to keep the money down and reduce things, then on the other side, all I hear is you complaining about your salary.
No,
and
I don't.
The fact that your wife doesn't get paid, and that why don't you cut the budget in the governor's office then?
We have. And well, then why do I get hollered at when I go out and earn a second income? My wife lost her income, and I have a family that, you know, we were a double income family before I was elected. We then became a single income family because she had to give up her business to be first lady. She also has to manage and run the residence for no pay. She doesn't get paid to, and that's fine. But I am going to look out for my family too. And so if I moonlight on Saturday night, I'm going to do it.
Governor?
Yep.
You knew what the wages were before you ever run. I am a firm believer that no public official should, in an elected office, should get a wage increase while he's in there on that election term.
And I'm not asking. I'm not asking for a wage increase.
I haven't. Say that many times.
No, I haven't. I have not asked for one penny more money as governor. I have not asked my wages to be increased at all, not even inflation. I haven't asked for any pay raise. I'll earn money in the private sector if I need it. And I do. I have not asked for 1 cent of a pay increase for myself. There was a bill put in last year to raise all our wages. It never got to my desk, and I would have vetoed it anyway.
We're going to go to Diane in Plymouth. Diane, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Governor Ventura, mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention, I guess I'm a recent graduate from a private school here in Minnesota, and I had mixed feelings when I first heard about your funding or maybe the cuts in funding as far as education. But
I mean, in the cuts in what
well,
was
I guess,
asked for. I'm not cutting funding. Every education is getting more this budget than they got last budget. I just didn't fully fund everything they asked for.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, that's what I meant to say.
And okay.
Actually, I just wanted everyone or all the listeners to hear that as a student, or at least a past student, I do think that a lot of the schools abuse the money that they use and that they don't use it to the fullest that they could.
Are you talking K through 12? Are you talking higher ed?
No, the colleges, higher education. Like, for example, the University of Minnesota. Not that they would, not them specifically, but when you're talking your public schools or private schools, I think a lot of them, you know, when they say that they're going to have to not give teachers or professors raises, just because they get the money they ask for, they don't necessarily give those professors increased salaries. They don't always give the students, or they don't always use all that money towards the students. And so I think that if you make the schools work on a tighter budget, they'll use everything they have for the, I guess, the higher good of the students.
So your opinion is that they have more money, that they don't use every dollar as well as they could in the higher ed?
No, I don't think they do. Oh, from everything I've seen, no.
Okay, and you're a student who just graduated?
Yes, that is correct.
Well, that's pretty good. You're
from a private college, you
from
said?
From a private college, yes.
So how do you know about the University of Minnesota or MinSCU?
I took classes at the U just last year.
Okay.
So.
All right. So this is based on a few classes. Okay,
yes.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We're going to go to John.
Why are
Stillwater.
You smiling so much? Because someone backed me up?
No, Governor. Just the sheer cheeriness of being in the same booth. What
okay.
can I say?
All right.
We're going to go to John in Stillwater. John, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Governor?
Hi, John. How are you?
Fine. The question I'd like to ask is, the figures that you gave out when you were mayor, you said that they were afloat in money
mm-hmm.
of $72 million, was it, I believe?
Right. Well, it's between 70 and 74. I can't remember the exact. Yeah.
One, where did you get this information from? Was it from the certified annual financial reports?
Yes.
And two,
it was from the city finance director, Mr. Erickson.
And everyone in every county, in every state, has these same files, is that correct?
No, that I'm not saying that. I'm the only, all I used for an example was the city that I was mayor of.
Right,
that I have a direct line to. I fully knew it, and I even talked to the state auditor, Judy Dutcher, the other day about it, and she said, yeah, they're getting much, much better at hiding money.
Yeah, well, how about the state of Minnesota? What's in their certified annual financial report that states how much money the state is floating in?
Well, we do. We have it, too. Absolutely.
Can you tell us how much that is?
We keep a reserve now of about $1 billion.
There you are, folks. Thank you, Governor.
Sure.
In the time that we have remaining, wanted to make sure that we hit some other topics. You mentioned earlier your extracurricular activities,
mm-hmm.
your outside income, your outside jobs.
Yeah.
How do you think last Saturday went?
It's a project. You know, we're going to continue to improve it, as you always do in any major TV production, to that level with that many cameras and production that goes on, and all the things that can go wrong will go wrong. Murphy's Law will always show up whenever you have that many bodies doing something.
What went wrong on Saturday?
I thought we were overproduced a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, from a technical end, as a professional in that business, I thought there was production, they need to back off a little bit on it and let everybody freewheel a little bit more, and I think that'll work better. But other than that, it's an enjoyment. It's a place for me to put on a different hat and let out some, you know, a lot of people, you know, will do things to relieve stress, and I enjoy performing, and this gives me an opportunity to, on Saturday night, go perform, which is what I did before I got elected, and probably what I'll go back to in some way, shape, or form when I leave public office.
And what impact do you think your work at the XFL is going to have on this legislative session?
None. Has nothing. It's legislators all have jobs too. I think Representative Abrams said it to me best, Ron Abrams. He looked at me and said, Governor, I'll make you a deal. I said, what's that, Ron? He goes, you don't ask me what I do on the weekend, and I won't ask you what you do on the weekend. And I said, you got a deal.
And also, let's talk about seatbelts. You mm-hmm. changed your mind.
I didn't really change my mind per se. We're not changing the law. The law is there. You must wear a seatbelt in the state of Minnesota. It's a $25 fine. That law was already on the books. All we did was change it to where law enforcement people can now enforce it, to where they can now pull you over if you're not wearing it. I did it for economics, because of the fact that statistics overwhelmingly show that we're faced with, when people do get injured in car accidents, if you're wearing a seatbelt, high percentages show if you do get injured, it won't be as severely and things of that nature. I don't think anyone can argue that fact anymore, that seatbelts save lives, that seatbelts stop injuries. And that means seatbelts will save money for people to wear them. Plus, I think it's a good idea because children mimic what adults do. And when they see adults not wearing seatbelts, well, why should they then? And so I think it's just a good thing to do to get people used to. The first thing you do when you get an automobile should be put your seatbelt on before you even stick the key in the ignition, before you even check your rearview mirror. You know, everyone goes through everything, you know, kind of a check thing when you get into a car, making sure before you turn it on. Well, we'd like to make sure that seatbelt is the first thing you do when you get into that automobile. Put it on because it's the smart thing to do.
All right. And also wanted to ask you about casinos. You've said that it isn't the state. The state doesn't need to take on the role of running casinos. But what do you think about privately operated and owned casinos?
Well, first of all, let me say casinos aren't high on my list. I've got plenty more to deal with. They're not in my spotlight. They're in the media spotlight, of course, because it's controversial. So they're going to make anything the spotlight that they can make money off of. You know, we got to be honest here that the media is in the business of making money, too. I just don't believe that the state should be in the casino business no more than they should be in the restaurant business. No more, like I teased Sid Hartman yesterday about it. I said, well, Sid, how about if we start a state-operated newspaper and we kick all your newspapers off the corner and put ours out there? You know, how would you feel about that? There'd be outrage. Of course, if they did that. But my view is that's not state government's business to be running casinos and training blackjack dealers and giving blackjack dealers health care and things of that nature and make sure they know how to do it right. If there is going to be an expansion of gambling, it to me would have to happen in the private sector. It's not on my radar screen to do so. I'm not carrying any bills to get that done, but I will not support a state-operated casino because I don't think state government needs to be in the gambling business.
And you mentioned something last night on public television about legalized betting on football games, et cetera.
Yeah, that's an industry out there right now. I've been told it's a $2 billion industry that we don't collect a dime of taxes on. It's an industry on sports betting. People bet every weekend on all sports games, and it goes on. And my view would be that would be the thing I would, if I were going to get into the gambling business in the private sector, rather than compete with the Native Americans with slot machines and blackjack, I would think if the way to make the money in gambling is to open up sports betting and allow a sports book to be out there, because that way you're not infringing upon the Native Americans' casinos, and yet you could get the revenue, I guess, that everyone is desiring from the world of gambling.
Right.
And you know why it wouldn't bother me, Catherine? I don't gamble. I've never gambled once in a casino in Minnesota, and I don't bet on sports games. So, you know, that's again, people's own recreation of what they want to do with their extra money.
So quickly, because we're down to seconds here, you think that we're going to end up with more funding for education than what you've
No, heard. I don't no? think anything. Now, no. All I'm saying is it's the legislature's job. The ball is in their court now. I've submitted my budget. Now it's the legislature's time to do their work and to do their job. When they come back with a budget to me, I will assess what they did, and we'll see if they outspend me. We'll see if they don't. And we'll see, you know, again, are they going to give tax cuts? What will happen? It's their job now. I've submitted my budget, and I feel good about it.
Governor, it's always good to have you come by.
You too, Catherine. And we'll, next time, hopefully both of us will be down another 10 pounds when we see again.
Let's hope so, Governor.
All right.
Thank you.